TV Campfire Podcast.
I was like, yep, okay, so you win for the week.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken record.
Oh, no! We're fans.
It's one of the best things on television.
Oh! All right, we got you a hold of the
level. No, you didn't.
We talk TV.
That was the best scene ever. Like, that blew me away.
It was absolutely amazing. I just couldn't believe it.
Welcome to the show.
This is podcast number 604, and I'm Libby, your host. And this week, we have returning guests.
Hi, this is Yusun, costume designer and TV enthusiast from Los Angeles.
And this is Tom. I chair the Department of Visual and Media Arts at Palm Beach Atlantic University in Florida, and also host the Screen Tom podcast on iTunes and Spotify.
All right, let's start off with the news. Tom, help us out. What do you got?
Lots of stuff. First off, ABC has announced that they picked up The Conners for season 7, which will also be its final season, which is pretty freaking good for a revival of an old show.
Sure.
AMC planned to submit Walking Dead: The Ones Who Live as a limited series, and the Television Academy said, not so fast. It's got continuing plot lines from other shows. It is not self-contained. Therefore, it's a series. So that's how they're going to be competing. A24 is teaming up with Pace Setter. Bridgerton creator Chris Van Dusen is going to create a series adaptation of L. Kennedy's bestseller Girl Abroad. It sounds a lot like Emily in Paris, except for it's an American girl in London. Fallout on Amazon nabbed 65 million viewers in its first 2 weeks, so it is a monster hit. They've also signed Elizabeth Banks and Jessica Biel to headline a series adaptation of the novel The Better Sister. Apple TV Plus has cast Callum Turner from Masters of the Air in the lead role of William Gibson's Neuromancer for the series adaptation. BET Studios announced a new multi-year deal with Tyler Perry and renewed a bunch of shows, including Sisters for Season 8, The Oval for Season 6, Assisted Living for Season 6, House of Pain for Season 12, 4 other series, and a new series, Route 187. CBS announced that Luke Kleintank will exit FBI International before season 4. Equalizer has been picked up for season 5. The Young Sheldon spinoff finally has a title, Georgie and Mandy's First Marriage. They canceled NCIS Hawaii because apparently it's very expensive to produce. And this is a kind of a crazy one. They picked up Sheriff Country, the backdoor pilot from Fire Country. Marina Baccarin will be the star for the 25-26 season. So get your shopping done early, kids.
Wow.
Fox announced that Paula Patton will guest star in an upcoming episode of Murder in a Small Town. Max announced that Rosie O'Donnell will join the cast and Just Like That for season 3. NBC picked up Night Court for season 3. Netflix announced Cobra Kai season 6 will be supersized with 15 episodes and split into 3 parts. And part 3 will end conveniently in time for the new Karate Kid crossover franchise movie with Jackie Chan from the reboot and Ralph Macchio from the OG series. Steve Carell has been cast opposite Tina Fey in a 4-season series adaptation from the 1981 Alan Alda movie. This is the second time that movie's been adapted as a series. Wednesday season 2 has added Thandi Newton to the cast. Heartstopper season 3 has added Jonathan Bailey, Haley Atwell, and Eddie Marson to their cast. Netflix also acquired the series Calabasas from executive producers Kim Kardashian, Emma Roberts, and Pretty Little Liars creator I. Marlene King. And Leanne Morgan, who I guess is a popular female comedian, will star in a multi-cam comedy series from co-creator Chuck Lorre. They gave it a 16-episode order. Paramount Plus announced the Rosemary's Baby prequel film Apartment 7A will drop on their streaming service ahead of Halloween. The Peabody Awards next month will honor Mel Brooks with the Career Achievement Award and Quinta Brunson with the Trailblazer Award. And Peacock is raising prices for the second time in a year, $7.99 for premium, $13.99 for premium plus, and if you subscribe for a year at a pop, you save a little cheddar. And that's it.
What's on Peacock again?
Nothing that I watch, so which is fine. Poker Face will be coming back at some point in time. I think Wolf Like Me season 2's on, and
yeah, well, Wolf Like Me season 2 wasn't very good.
Yeah, well, P- Peacock. Okay. I'm sorry. When Xfinity gave me Peacock for free, fine. When you want me to start paying for it, no.
Okay.
Not all worth right. it.
Let's start talking shows. First up, we're going to talk X-Men 97. And
so good.
I actually, because everybody I know is like going back and watching the original animated series. What is it, 92, 93, something like
that? 92.
92. So I just finished watching season one simultaneously. The animation, of course, does not stand up. And it was obviously written for children, for like 7-year-olds. It feels very different. Because then when I switched to 97, I was like, technically it's the same storyline, but that's all that's continued.
It's the same. It's the approach. It's the tone thing. I watched the best adaptation of the Dark Phoenix saga is from the cartoon.
Oh, absolutely.
Unfortunately, they've done it twice in live action poorly.
And it badly.
So when you get there.
Yeah, I saw it originally when I was a kid, but I don't remember it. It's been so long. So that's part of why I'm rewatching. Gotcha. But yeah, let's talk about episodes 7 and 8 of 97 real quick. I just wanted to put that out there that I've actually
I think back. 97 is so much better than the OG.
I mean, yeah, the art style is amazing, and it's written for older people. Like, it's the tone feels like it's written for me versus for my child self. So
Bright Eyes. So they're looking for Bolivar Trask. And we find out who the big bad really is. I didn't know who that dude was, so I had to...
Okay, start off again, like, start for fresh.
They're looking for Bolivar Trask. They're basically trying to find out who enabled them, you know, the Super Sentinel that attacked and killed Gambit. They want to, you know, they...
This is when Rogue goes rogue.
Rogue, yeah. Well, it is her name.
She drops that dude off the side of a building? I was like, oh my god.
Well, it turns out that he wasn't just an ordinary dude.
But she didn't know that.
Yeah, well, that's what makes her a cool character.
When she dropped him off the side of that building, she 100% expected him to go splat.
Yes. But that's what makes her a cool character.
Well, I mean, she didn't used to be like that. This is a new thing.
Yeah, well, because the dude, they murdered her bae.
Oh, I'm not mad. I totally understand where she's coming from. I was just very surprised that they went there. That's all. And now they have the new robotic versions of the Sentinels. They basically are now like...
They're kind of like Borgified.
Yeah, it's like regular people that you know have this hidden on switch where they turn into Sentinels.
The thing where Jubilee goes home with... I guess his name's going to be Sunspot when they finally get him in a costume.
And oh, his mom sucks. But yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing is... It's fascinating that people complaining about this show being woke. It's like, dude, the X-Men have always been a metaphor for pick your favorite downtrodden group. That's right. In the DNA of the characters since Stan Lee and Jack Kirby created them.
Right.
It's kind of like with people complaining about Star Trek, the new Star Trek shows being woke. It's like, dude, did you not pay attention? Were you
like that? The old 60s version where the characters had a half black side and a half white side. And they're like, we're so different. And everybody's like, wait, what? What do you mean?
As a little kid, I'm like, could that be any more heavy-handed?
Exactly. And that was Star Trek in the 60s.
That was the third season.
Yes.
After Paramount fired Roddenberry and brought in Fred Freiberger, serial show killer.
Wow. All right. Well, let's talk about 97.
I thought it was kind of realistic because what they were going... I mean, the metaphors are still... You know, the coming out metaphor is baked into the DNA of the characters and the franchise. It's always
He's like, will you come home with me and help me tell my mom? You know, all of it was just very much there. And then the mom was like, of course I knew you were gay. I mean, a mutant. She's like, of course I knew that the whole time. But we won't let our friends know that. We won't tell anybody. We'll just keep it under our hats. And I was like, oh, my goodness.
I did think it was cool that when Jubilee's like, you need to take me shopping and you're rich and I want clothes. So.
Yeah,
and then they get
cute.
Attacked by these crazy human sentinel thingies.
And they run home to the mom, and the mom was like, do what the authorities tell you to do, dear, and put these nice collars around your neck and don't fight. I was like, wow. So she doesn't, she cares more about her reputation and all of that stuff than she cares about her son. Because I mean, I thought they were going to be like, as much as she comes off that way, she really cares about her son. But the answer was not really.
And not again, with,
you know,
appropriated a class coming, a classic coming out scenario.
Right. You know, right. Behave. So. But the main thing is once someone, they blow up the mansion yet again. How many times have they blown up this mansion? I feel like this is...
Are you talking about the X-Mansion?
Yeah, like how many times
have they blown up? That thing gets attacked all the time.
Yeah, it's like, so they blow it up again, and they have all these cyborg sentinels coming through, and Rogue is knocked out, and everybody has to protect
Beast,
her.
It was the Blue Brigade holding down the fort, Beast and Nightcrawler.
Yeah, and Nightcrawler Wolverine was, too. Yeah, he was.
Wolverine's just like, not blue, but he's, I guess yeah. He's kind of cool too.
Yeah, and they were all fighting. They fight everybody off, and it's really epic. And then the spaceship lands, and they're just like, oh my God, another enemy. And I was like, no, it's Professor. I knew it was Xavier.
Well, of course it is.
But the best moment ever, though, is he lands, he looks at the thing, he was like, oh, I hope I'm not too late. I was like, oh, you're kind of too late. You're like on the portal, you know? And then he's like, to me, my X-Men. And I like jumped. I was like, this is... And then they started showing all these people and they showed freaking Spider-Man. And I was like, yes! So
that's
one thing
I really love about this show is because it is produced by Marvel Studios and right. You've got Feige and Ryan Minerding involved. The other characters haven't taken an active part yet, but they're out there. They coexist in the same universe, which is kind of cool.
And they basically showed them. They were like, hey, we can show these characters and we can bring them in as a cartoon. And I guess Sony is not going to be mad they're using Spider-Man because it's a cartoon.
Disney/Marvel owns all the characters. Sony has a license. They don't own Jack. They have a license.
It was like a whole thing about using Spider-Man. But anyway, I don't know. I'm not going to get into the legal, but I just know they showed Spider-Man and I was super excited. So, yay. So now I'm ready for this two-part finale, like, or three-part.
Yeah, I think they're going to make us wait week by week because they know they got us hooked.
Oh, absolutely. I'm 100% in. So, yes. X-Men 97. All the thumbs are up. Next up, we're going to talk Will Trent. And Yusin, you did watch this one, right?
I did, yes.
So last week we found out that, you know, we dealt with some of Will Trent's family and all this other stuff. And this week he's feeling, you know, kind of down a little bit. Like, I'm trying to remember specifically what, because it's a slight continuation of last week. And I'm blanking on everything that happened. Can you help me out?
I don't know what you're talking about because it was the wedding. He went to go see, he was partnered with his partner to go to a wedding.
Right. You were correct. And I was trying to continue it from something else. But I will say what was weird is because his partner had her hair in a way that I hadn't seen in a long time. I was like, wait, who? I was like, oh, that's his partner. Like, it took me a second to realize that was his partner. She was all dressed up and she had her hair different. It did take me a second.
Yeah. She looked great.
She did.
She looked fantastic. I really was like, I wear that.
The character is supposed to be old enough to have a son in college.
Yeah, especially once she dressed up for the wedding, the age difference looked so not right. Like,
she's supposed to be like a single young mother though, no?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But she still doesn't look old enough to be the mother of that kid.
Right.
Yeah, but I bet you the math works out because the last time I checked on math or something, actually on Vikings, it freaked me out. It's like, oh my gosh, she really is old enough to have had that kid.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was that. It was almost like Die Hard. So it's like,
except for I loved the spin they put on it. That he's the one trapped in. He's Bonnie Bedelia. She's Bruce Willis.
Yes, she even had all the knives. She had all the knives strapped to her dress. It was great.
Did you hear her? Did you hear her Woman King
yes,
comments?
Yes, I did. Yes. I'm thinking Olivia must be loving this.
That made me laugh. I thought Olivia too, actually. It was really funny. Yeah, no, I was really surprised at how gruesome the episode was. It was really violent.
Oh, yeah. When she killed that dude and stabbed him like 10 times, I was like, yes. What show am I watching? Like, I had a moment.
You know, I don't know if I'm getting desensitized compared to Fallout, though. That's
No, you're right. Which is
but for broadcast,
for broadcast,
that was pretty gruesome.
Yeah, but for broadcast, I was not expecting it, nor do I want it. To be honest, it's not what I watch shows like The Rookie or Will Trent for. You know what I mean? So it was a little off-putting. I mean, it didn't make me not watch the episode or not enjoy the episode, but I was like, I really was like, oh my God, they're going there. And then even at the end when Will Trent drills the guy, you know, with the drill, I was like,
that was a little unnecessary. There was a gun on him already, but Trent
yes.
Was like, it's not like they showed a lot of blood and gore though.
No, but still, just the idea of it. So yeah, I thought that was weird. It was
I think they were trying to show that. That was what I was talking about. The continuation is he was hallucinating.
Yes.
12-year-old Will
from his 12-year-old version, and they had that ghost kind of just hanging over the episode, and that trauma is why he reacted the way he did and drilled that guy in the back.
Yeah,
I was not happy with the end of the episode because he and Angie ended up.
Nope. Oh no, it didn't happen. I'm in denial. Because they are toxic together. He was like, "I wonder why we're not together." I was like, "Cause you guys suck as a couple. You're not a good couple."
They both have so much emotional baggage, and even though it's shared baggage, they're not, they need somebody whole to help them heal.
Right.
And that was the bad thing about I thought it was a great episode. Any episode that spots like, I really, if you look how far these characters have come, because when Faith and Will are paired together at the beginning of the series, she's like, oh, hell no. And then you can see that they've gradually built this bond of trust and concern.
Yeah, and he's really protective of her son. Like, he's like hyper aware of being protective of her son and everything and all of that. Like, they are really true partners. Like, really.
This show for me, this was the anti-sophomore slump. I mean, they had this sophomore season has been really strong, and there's only a couple episodes left, but I have faith that they won't screw it up. So, except for stop having him fall into her. For JJ.
Oh my God. Like, I don't understand why it feels like the easy route that the writers are just doing. Like, there's no, I know no one who's like, the end game is the two of them together. And I'm like, please, no.
I wish they hadn't killed off Cricket so quickly because like the two of them together.
They had really good chemistry.
From 201. They had crazy mad chemistry.
Yes.
And I'm like, as the episode unfolded, I'm like, you were totally going to Kyle Chandler her. That's a famous episode of Grey's.
Yes, I know it.
That was the post-Super Bowl episode of Grey's Anatomy when they blow up Kyle Chandler, the bomb explosion.
Yes,
Pink mist.
Yes, I remember that. I want him to have a relationship, a really good relationship, and where we get to see him slowly fall for somebody. And
heal.
And this is just like, I'm in a really traumatic place. You're in a really traumatic place. Let's be in a traumatic place together. And I'm like, no.
And that's how they grew up.
I know. And it sucks. And I hate them together so much. I've never anti-shipped somebody this hard. Well, that's not true.
Yeah.
I anti-ship.
And I like her as an actor, but I just don't like what they do with her a lot of times in this role.
Correct.
It's very predictable and not interesting.
Yep. Will's character and his part, like that stuff, the GBI, I want to say?
FBI. Like the FBI.
Yeah, but with
those guys, their storylines are always pretty good. Like, I like their stories. What were you going to say?
The thing about, I thought it was hilarious, as much trouble and conniving as she was going to get the facts, and then it falls on the floor.
Oh my God. She's like, I need a pen.
Because who sends a fax in the 21st century, man?
Nobody. But I thought it was smart because they blocked everything except the fax machine. So that totally makes sense. But no one checks it.
I know. I thought that was very realistic because, you know.
I was like, they did all that and they have no backup. They're all dead, you know. But yeah, I thought this episode was really good. So thumbs up for me.
Yep.
Thumbs up.
Next up, we're going to talk Hacks, and this was season three. It's three. Thank you. I'm not crazy. Season three premiere episodes 1 and 2. And the first episode is 1 year later from the finale of last season. And last season, I'm glad they gave me a previously on because I had forgotten.
Seriously.
How it ended.
In a minute.
And I was like, oh, yeah. And I get what Deborah was doing, which is, I have now had this great success. Now I want you to go off and have your great success. And you're never going to do that.
Well, under she's my the mama bird kicking the young,
yes,
bird.
I totally get it. I get it intellectually. But if you're going to do that, you don't cut them off entirely. You know, you don't just like, you know,
they're
cold
both
turkey.
So them. Self-absorbed, though. I mean,
they are. They are. But I just thought Deborah could have done it better. The fact that the other girl had to go into therapy over it was like,
that was hilarious.
Yeah, it was,
and kind of believable. It was believable because it's like the death of a relationship, you know, and it was toxic to begin with. So when you're released from something that's toxic, no matter even though that it's toxic, you know, it was so instrumental in her life and so huge, you know, it was very believable that, and funny though, that she had to have therapy to like overcome the separation. So I liked this episode a lot. I loved the premiere, you know, because of where they are at in their relationship. And then of course it goes even further in the second episode, you know, instead of them being at each other's throats now, you know, and being so mean to each other, there's this kindness, you know, and this comfort between the two of them.
Before we get into episode two, let's back up a little bit, which is, I want to talk about the Tom Cruise cake, which made me laugh a lot.
Yes.
Is that for real?
I believe it is.
Oh, it is. Wow. It's absolutely a thing. Yeah. It's I didn't know. I didn't know you didn't know, Tom. Yeah. He's known for sending this cake. I think it is coconut. I mean, I think they went that far to be specific, but he has this cake that he loves and that he absolutely sends it to all of the people on his contact list every year.
Oh, wow.
And like, it's a big deal to get it.
If you get to get the Tom Cruise cake, you have made it. You've made the list.
I believe it's Jane's on Third. Is who makes the cake. I don't quote me on that though, but I think in Los
Monica?
Angeles. No, in Los Angeles, on 3rd Street.
Okay.
In Santa Monica, right? Or
No, not in Santa Monica. 3rd Street on LA. You know, in LA, like, you know, in the Grove area.
Oh,
3rd Street.
Because I was
Grove.
Like, 3rd Street tells me nothing.
Yeah, you know, over there.
Okay. Oh,
3rd
okay,
Street over
you.
There.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought the fact that it was like she got the cake and then she didn't eat it because she was on this crazy diet. And I liked that. What's the girl's name? The younger girl. Because I know
Ava.
Deborah. Ava. Thank
Ava.
You.
Ava.
I like that Ava called her on her career is going so well and so easy. She's creating her own roadblocks by wearing this super ugly dress.
Well, when we saw her in the comedy club and they were laughing at everything, you knew that was not good.
For a second, I actually thought it was a dream. I thought she was having some weird nightmare or something.
Yeah, but, I did too.
Audiences can be strange, especially when audiences are a mob. You know, if you've ever been to a sitcom taping before in LA.
Which are super boring. It's way less entertaining than you would think they would be. But continue.
Yeah, I just imagine, you know, I could totally see that environment because some people are just so thrilled with it. Ooh, we've got a big star in our presence.
Right. Everything they say
I've
is
never
great.
Met.
Yeah, but I mean, I like the fact that she was trying to kind of self-sabotage. But I also like when she was like,
that dress was hideous, though.
It really was. It was really bad.
That was the most ugly dress ever.
What was great about it is she's like, let me check my closet. And they go to this warehouse, and she's got all these dresses.
Oh, that warehouse was my dream. I loved it.
I know. I thought of you when I saw it. But then I was like, you're a terrible stylist if you're just telling her yes to everything. That's not a stylist.
Well, no. Like a yes person.
Yeah, that is unhelpful. And then
but that's a problem. That's a problem. I've seen this with celebrities that some people don't have anybody who will tell them the brutal truth. I was a prominent star that we know of took a role in a movie, got completely savaged by the critics. And I was talking to a good friend of mine saying, why didn't somebody tell him? And they don't have anybody who's going to tell them the truth. That's for real. I mean, you've got to have somebody to tell you the truth at all times. It's like, that thing is hideous. That joke's not funny, et cetera, et cetera. As dysfunctional as Deborah and Ava's relationship is, they work when they're not fighting or doing power
really play. Well. Right, and that goes to the second episode you were trying to say, Yusen, which is in the second episode, they got along great, mainly because they were distant from each other. They were texting and calling, and they weren't dependent on each other, and they got along really, really well. And I think now that when you get to the end of the episode where she's now back to living with Deborah,
no.
They're going to go right back to being toxic.
Yeah,
I hope not.
No, I think they are. I think they are. And that's what the girlfriend basically said. Though, talk about sitcom tropes. The second she found that ring,
of course.
My God. No. Why would you assume that? It doesn't look like a wedding ring. It doesn't. Nope.
An engagement ring.
It didn't look like anything. It looked like a mood ring. That's what it looked like.
You're dating yourself, Libya.
I'm dating my grandmother. My grandmother's had a mood ring, and I went through her jewelry box and found it. So that's why I know what it is.
Ha.
I'm for real. I'm not that old, man.
I wonder what Melissa Rivers thinks of this show, because even though the characters, Deborah is a composite, she's a lot of Joan Rivers.
I bet.
She's a lot of Joan Rivers. And the whole late night thing, totally Joan Rivers. And man, I just, you know, what she subbed for, you know, whatever the show was, I forget what the show was called, and the comedian that we'd never heard of before. Once she did that, I'm like, oh, I know where this is going. I mean, so I do like that. Her manager and the assistant are finding a way to work with each other a little bit better.
But they're both incompetent.
Oh, my God. They're hilarious.
They're incompetent idiots, both of them.
He's not that incompetent. He's just slightly incompetent. She's, you know.
She's miles more incompetent than him, but he's not that competent either. That's the thing. Like, it would be different if he was smart. He's not that smart.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, oh, and bringing Helen Hunt into the universe for this season as the network exec. Oh, my God.
Oh, right.
And that's who that was.
I couldn't figure out who that was.
Oh, yeah. Helen Hunt. Emmy and Oscar winner.
I know who Helen is. She just didn't quite look like herself. That took me a minute.
Yeah.
Oops, I said that out loud.
Anyway, we need to move on. We got to keep going.
Hacks is back, baby.
Yeah.
No, it was great. I really enjoyed it. And I like that the arc of them growing. I don't want them to be toxic this entire time. Even if you're telling me that they're going to go back to it, at least it was nice to see this reprieve.
Yes, and it's nice to see that when she's not working for Deborah, they're actually good friends.
Yeah.
I like that. All right, let's move on. Next up, we're going to talk Star Trek Discovery. And this is a continuation of their big story arc or quest arc, I would call it, to find all the pieces that make the whole that is some device that will lead you to the progenitor device. But my thing about that, my biggest complaint is if the progenitors or the aliens who have the progenitor device knew how dangerous this device was, that you couldn't risk it to fall in anybody's hands. So you had to make this super crazy elaborate test to see if someone was worthy to do it. I'm like, you destroy it. You don't keep it around. If it's that dangerous that you have to go through all of this to get your hands on it, that means nobody should have it. That's the answer. Like, why would you keep this around? It doesn't even make any sense. So that's my biggest issue with this season.
I mean, unless at the end we find out there's a special reason why, you know, that's kind of what we're waiting for.
No, I don't think we're waiting for that. There's no.
No, I am. I'm waiting for it to find out. I'm waiting to find out why would you keep this machine around? Like, what's so important about it that it needs to stay in existence?
It shouldn't, because you can erase existence with it. It makes no sense.
I know, but you should also be able to do something amazing with it. And that's what I want to know, why it was being kept around. So that's half the mystery for me.
I don't think they're going to answer that, but go ahead, Tom.
It's very Genesis device-y in terms of, in the wrong hands, it could be used to do really bad stuff.
Right, so don't build it. Don't build it. That's your answer. Don't do it.
Are you talking about both episodes or just the most recent one?
Let's talk about the most recent one. Well, we're supposed to talk about both, but I can't even remember the one from
Mirrors, where they basically go into something, some space thing, and they discover the ISS Enterprise, yada, yada,
the
blah,
world.
Blah.
Right, but that's the one where I thought the episode was going to be really cool, and then it was just okay.
It was just very routine.
Yeah, because they were like, Mirror Universe
Starship without Mirror Universe characters.
Right, just exactly. I was like, we just got the Mirror Universe ship?
Yeah, but then we found out that was all, but that was the whole backstory of Maul and Locke when they were in the...
Yes, but it had nothing to do with the Mirror Universe. It had zero to do...
No, it didn't. No, I'm just saying that episode, though, that's what that was about.
Oh,
it was more about that.
I agree. So why are you mixing Mirror Universe to it? That's all I'm saying.
It wasn't the coolest way to do a lot of exposition.
Right. And I did like the flashback with Maul and Locke. It made them feel like three-dimensional characters. I thought they did a good job with the flashbacks. And I was like, oh, I get these people now. So they did accomplish their goal.
Yeah.
So that's good. I just didn't understand why we had to do it on a Mirror Universe ship. Like,
yeah.
Okay. They did. But I'd say the flashbacks were good. The characters were cool. And then in the next one, I loved Michael's
Whistle speak.
Yeah, I loved Michael's enthusiasm with how much she got into the anthropology of it all. And it was really good to see Michael and Tilly like partner up and be buddies again.
Because we haven't seen them work this well together. I mean, when she was off the show for a little bit, and I know some people, I like Tilly as a character. She's kind of she's not your typical Starfleet officer.
Sure. I like that about her too. Yeah.
Me too.
I thought where they landed in terms of their take on faith and belief was fascinating for Star Trek. Because it's almost like, you know, Roddenberry was very receptive to organized religion in the 60s, and then by the 80s, like, no. And then Deep Space Nine kind of cracked the door back open. And this one's like saying, hey,
we can have both. We can have both. But only thing I had a problem with was her breaking the Prime Directive.
As soon as you know.
I know, it was sketchy. Her excuse for doing it was sketchy.
We joked about that on the Ready Room the previous week, where he said, whenever they say something about the Prime Directive, you know they're going to
break it.
I mean, come on. This franchise is, what, 65-some years
they've
old?
They've broken it a million times.
Oh, my gosh.
Houston, your thoughts. Go ahead.
I really enjoyed the episode. I liked how they made it. They didn't make Tilly the one that was like weak in the
running?
Marathon, you know what I mean? In the running, you know what I mean? I thought that was a choice, you know what I mean? And I really liked that. I liked that, she was the one that was the endurance queen and that she was going to kind of make it through. So I definitely think that was a choice. And I agreed with that. The trope of like sacrificing, you know, to make something happen, it's happened in so many, not just sci-fi, but in television shows. I still liked it because Tilly, I like her acting, and sometimes she can be over the top and it can be annoying, but I thought it was very sweet when she said, you know, give me the song of your mother that, you know, sing the song to me, you know, that your mother sang to you when you went to sleep. And I thought it was poignant, and it worked for me because, you know, then it was that song that helped to convince the dad to, like, you know, release the door. So, you know, for me, it worked. It was convincing without being, you know, cloying, you know what I mean? Like, I liked it. For me, the episode worked, and yeah, of course they break the Prime directive, but I don't know. I mean, we've seen them do it. So it's not like, oh my God, you know, how are they going to get around it?
Usually I feel like their reasoning behind breaking the Prime directive makes sense.
You know? Right.
This time it was like, I'm not going to let my best friend die.
No, but at the end, she did say, though, that, like, in order for that machine to continue working, it's going to need to have maintenance. So they're going to have to show them the machine and show them how to maintain the machine.
Or, which is what they normally do in Starfleet, they send a science team who goes there and fixes it, you know, periodically. That's how they maintain the Prime Directive. That's usually what they would have done.
Part of the problem, though, is whoever did it, who put those machines in the first place, they totally violated the Prime Directive.
Yes.
And so, you know, it's the old two wrongs don't make a right thing. That didn't bother me so much. I was just really glad, because if this had been Picard's era, we would have gotten this big speech about religion being completely superstitious and blah, 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 blah. I thought Michael's solution was just so more elegant. You know, there are different ways, and this can be a way that your gods are now working with y'all.
Yeah. Right.
I did like Michael's speech. My issue was her reasoning behind doing it. I was just like, it felt very selfish versus for the greater good of the people. That's all.
I gotta say, I really like Sonequa Martin-Green in this character. And I
was, oh yeah, like, I love her. I love her.
She's so good.
I like her very much in this season.
One thing I don't want, which I'm afraid they're going to go back to, is I don't want her to end up with Booker.
Right.
It
doesn't look like they're keeping that door open, because they're like...
Well, I mean, at the end of the episode, he has this conversation, like, do you miss her? Do you miss your relationship? Blah, blah, blah. And they didn't answer the question one way or the other. And I was like, please, for the love of God, don't put them back together. So I just, yeah. Apparently I'm anti-ship this year. I'm like anti-shipping everybody. But it feels like... we're at the point where we've tried all these relationships already.
You're saying Will Tritt and Michael Burnham should get together. And Angie can get Cleveland Booker.
I still don't like that. But I do like the Will Tritt and Michael. SMG. That could be interesting. I'm not mad at that. All right, let's move on. So overall, thumbs up-ish for Discovery.
Second episode was better.
Yeah, definitely better. All right, next up, we're going to talk about Fallout, and we're going to talk episode 4, 5, and 6. And in episode 4, this is the episode where Lucy and the ghoul are hanging out together, and they fight, and she bites his finger off. And so he's like, reaches up, cuts her finger off, and calls it a fair exchange. And I was like, oh my God.
I thought that was a callback to an earlier episode when they're inspecting her. It's like, ooh, nice teeth, all 10 fingers.
But I just like the fact that, because they were arguing about different stuff, and he was like, this is what I call a fair exchange. And I was, I just felt like if someone's going to slice my finger off slowly like he did, I felt like she should have screamed a little more.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, her reaction was like, oh, I guess he's cutting my finger off. Like, what? Anyway. And then he takes her to some shop and basically sells her to these people. And he's like, I can either shoot you, you can take your chances in there. And it's a good thing she took her chances, because she totally took that whole place out. That was pretty cool. And for those who didn't recognize the voice of the robot, you guys recognize
him? We get to meet him eventually in a flashback.
Well, I know, but that's later. I'm just saying, in the moment, I was like, why do I recognize that voice? Where's that voice from? And I was like, Laszlo! Yay!
It was great. It's a great voice. It was a good choice.
Yeah, he was really cool as the robot. because he was super friendly as he was like, and I will now harvest your organs. Lay back, this will only pinch. Like, that was so good. And I just like that she just rolled through and just killed everybody. Like, she just let all those guys...
She's like, surprisingly proficient, having growing up literally sheltered.
Yes. But, I mean, it was partly because she didn't understand who those ghouls... She's like, let the prisoners out. And they're like, no. You don't want to let those guys out. She's like, yes, I do. I want to let everyone out. And she lets them. They just eat everyone. I was like, oh, my God. Again. Like, what? So Fallout has been surprising me in really good ways. And yeah, so then she's like, I live by my golden rule. And she even brought the ghoul some medicine so he didn't die out on the pavement, even though he cut off her finger and sold her and her organs. I'm not sure I would do that. Even, you know, golden, he really tried to extra kill her. So
I was curious about that. I wondered why she did go and save him. It wasn't like he turned around and saved her for some reason.
Mm-mm.
So I don't know why she would have done that. I found that a little questionable.
Transform the world by being better, which of course is not going to work because the world's jacked.
Yes.
What's kind of interesting about this season is you basically have three main characters and a bunch of supporting ones. But Lucy, the ghoul, and Maximus, and they keep putting them in interesting pairings.
Yes. Pairing them up in really interesting ways. Which leads us to episode 5, because now that she left him laying on the ground. Oh, and he puts in a video of himself at the end, like when he gets high. Puts in a video of himself on some movie he was in. And she wanders off and runs into Maximus, which, Tom, do you want to talk about the next episode?
Yeah, Maximus in a... This kid isn't too smart.
he wants to trust this guy.
He wants to trust this guy, but he tells them the truth. And of course, the squire freaks out and locks up the armor. He steals the power core. So right. The armor is locked up and Maximus is trapped inside. And of course, he takes the head too. So, and then thankfully, Lucy comes along. And so it's, you know, basically like the, the lion, Aesop's fable with, is it the mouse and the lion or whatever?
You're not talking about scorpion and the scorpion and the
No. That's a different fable where basically the mouse helps the lion by taking the thorn out of his paw.
Yes.
Yeah.
Become good friends. So because he doesn't trust her, she doesn't trust him. But he basically
she thinks he's a hero because she thinks he's a knight.
Well, and he does nothing to dissuade her of that. I'm like, dude, haven't we? So anyway, he true to his word, he does have the medicine to heal her because she's starting to succumb to radiation sickness. Radaway.
If you're playing the game, Radaway will literally save your life. I was playing the game recently. I just started playing. And I wandered into some area and my radiation meter went nuts and my health just started dropping. And I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And I was like, Broadway. I like that it's a very good representation.
And she of course figures out that he's looking for the head too. And mm-hmm. So she says, I've got a tracker on it. So let's go do that.
No, but her deal with him is crazy because he cannot back it up. He can't back up his end of the deal at all.
Oh, no. Well, no. But, I mean, she could probably find the Brotherhood somehow. But he does not want to go see the Brotherhood because they will kill him.
Yes. And, I mean, his theory is if he shows up with the head, then they won't kill him. That's what he's been banking on.
His theory is. Yeah, but his intuition has been wrong so much so far.
Yes, he is not that bright.
No,
he is not.
Oh my God! But then when they end up in the Fallout show, the vault,
Vault 4.
She's like, it's the greatest place ever, and everyone is deformed somewhere, and the.
Well, when Chris Parnell shows up as a psychic, that was
with the one eye, and she was like, he was like, lots of people have one eyes. She was like, not in the middle.
I'm really interested in the flashbacks because I'm so. liking Cooper's character in the past before he becomes ghoulified.
Oh yeah, he's actually a really pretty stand-up guy. I like him.
Yeah.
But obviously, Vultko and that marriage seems to be going sour too because his wife's drinking the Kool-Aid.
Yep.
But
and so he, I like that he's, instead of fighting with his wife, he's decided to just investigate and figure it out on his own. So, and he wants to know, like, what does she, because she obviously knows something that she's not telling him.
Yep.
And so he's like, she's like, we can't afford to be 2 hours away when the bombs hit. And he's like, what are you talking about? Like, so yeah, so she obviously knows some stuff and she's not willing to tell him. And so he's like, all right, I need to figure this out. And the most surprising twist is that the fire woman, what are they calling her? The mother, the fire mother, or something like that, that she was from his time and she looks the same. She doesn't look a ghoul. She's not a ghoul. She looks 100% the same. I'm voting robot.
Oh.
I thought it was an interesting choice to juxtapose the scenes in the past with him investigating that meeting.
Right.
And then with Lucy and Maximus in the present investigating what's going on in Vault 4.
Well, Maximus isn't so much investigating as eating a gift basket.
He's investigating a gift basket.
He's eating popcorn and like, oh my god, what is this food? But to be fair, he's never eaten any of those foods before, so I get it.
Do you think he's been drugged somehow, or is he just like, this place is awesome?
I think he's just drunk the Kool-Aid.
Yeah,
I don't think he's been drugged.
Yeah, I think he's just like, I've never eaten popcorn, this food, had clean water, had slippers or anything, and apparently he
had a shower.
Apparently he doesn't know what his penis is supposed to do. So,
right.
Because that was so great. She was like, so, do you
that
have
was,
some?
Well, that was the funniest thing, because you would think that, you know, her being obviously a fertile young woman, that any male she meets, that would be, you know, and she just like gifts it to him on a silver platter. And he's like, ew.
It was so, and then he was like, oh, the Brotherhood, we don't do that. I was like, I'm not sure that's true.
Well, knights, if you remember Arthurian legend, Sir Galahad was the purest of all the knights. So.
Okay, so you're saying that none of those guys ever have sex?
Oh, not all of them. Obviously, you know, Guinevere looked at Lance a lot.
I know, I'm just saying he said it was a rule, and I was like, is it a rule or just you've never had sex? Like that, because he lies so much. I wasn't sure if he was lying.
I wouldn't be surprised if the Brotherhood imposed that on them, though, because they're supposed to be pure in heart, blah, blah. At least the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, like some monks.
Yeah.
The thing that's fascinating about this show is it's such a rich, complex world, and they've got so many games, but because they've eased you in it, it's not like they threw you into the deep end of the pool immediately. They gradually introduce different aspects, and you really start to suspect, oh, there's something shady going on. Just like when her brother is finding out that everybody in Vault 30, all these leaders of Vault 33 came from
Vault 31, like, what the heck is that? And
what's
now
that
we're in Vault 4, and all of Vault 4 are all malformed.
Are mutants of some
kind.
Yeah,
so she's
and
like,
then
what?
That little orgy.
What
thing
is that?
Like, it reminded me of the second classic Planet of the Apes movie, which freaked me out as a kid when they're worshiping the bomb.
Yeah, it's just like what is going on? And it was so funny because they're like passing the bowl and she's like putting it on. She's like, we will cover ourselves in the ashes of the dead. And she's just like, oh.
But what was kind of funny, though, is when they first get there, Maximus tells her, this place is a cult. And then he drinks the Kool-Aid. It's like, this place is awesome. They gave me a robe and slippers.
Well, he wasn't down there dancing in the blood yet, so he's not completely in the cult.
This is true.
But yeah, okay. that was really good.
When she goes to level 12, I mean, another thing I like about this show is whenever they say, you know, Ghostbusters, don't cross the streams, don't do this. As soon as they say, don't go to level 12, you know.
No,
we're
she's
going
to level 12.
She's going to 12.
And then as soon as the door like locks behind her, I was like, is this a trap for the idiots who decide to not listen and go to level 12? And it's just like, eliminate the people that don't listen to instructions. Oh my goodness, it was so crazy. And then she gets there and there's all the frozen bodies, which, by the way, if you play Fallout 4, it starts with everybody being frozen in those things.
Oh, wow.
So, and I was like, oh wait, this is the beginning of the game.
Are they
What
taking
are
bits
the
and all the
frozen
games?
bodies? What are
Okay.
the frozen
Okay,
bodies?
so at the point of when the bombs went off, there were certain vaults, not all the vaults, but there were certain vaults that they took healthy soldiers who had just fought in this war. If you were a certain level of soldier, they automatically let you and your family into these specific vaults. They were like, oh, you just have to sign the paperwork and the waivers. And you sign the paperwork and the waivers. And then when the bombs go off, they take you into the vault. And they give you your vault clothes and everything. And they're like, oh, here's this vault for your wife, and here's one for you. And you get in, and then you freeze. They freeze you because they're planning on doing experiments on you, but you don't know that. So there are certain vaults that were just designated for experimentation, and they needed subjects
So
for it.
they needed
obviously,
healthy people.
those
They
vaults.
needed healthy soldiers and their families. And so your character in Fallout 4, you're a soldier, a veteran. You take your newborn baby and your wife into the vault. You all get frozen. And then like halfway through or something, I don't know how much time has gone by, they thaw out your wife because they want your baby for experimentation. And so they thaw out your wife and try to take the baby, and she won't let the baby go. So they shoot your wife in the head.
Oh my God.
And you're awake, but you can't move because you're in your like chamber, but she's like right across and you can see it. And so your mission in Fallout 4 is to find out where they take your baby because you got frozen again. So my theory, because I haven't finished the game at all, is that you don't know how long you've been frozen, so your baby could be grown for all you know. But your character, your mission in Fallout 4 is to find your child. That's what you're trying to do.
I did think it was kind of cool that when Lucy finds the realm where there's the basically the history of what's going
Oh,
on
with the timeline?
with the timeline and also with the new California Republic flag with the two-headed bear.
That was
It's
cool.
like, okay.
That was cool. I
That
was
was
like, living in California, that flag made me laugh. But yeah, I think that they're doing a good job of mixing the storylines from the games
Are
and
they
all.
drawing from all the games to put make it a coherent narrative?
I believe so because I haven't I don't know. We'd have to ask Peter this because he's played all the games. I've only played I'm playing Fallout 4 right now. But the open of Fallout 4 and some of the stuff that I've seen totally go together. And most of the Fallout games are on the East Coast except for 76, which happens in Vegas. And the stuff that happens in Vegas, they're carrying some of that into this because it's close enough to LA.
Gotcha.
So that's how they're doing it. They're carrying pieces of all the games and letting you know each vault had a specific job. So they're because even in the in with the wife with his wife, she's telling him, you want to be in a management vault. You don't want to be in a regular vault. Because the regular vaults are the ones where they do experiments on people, they do all these other stuff. It depends. There's like levels of the vault system.
Right. Well, I like the show, not having watched, not having played the video game, not even knowing about the video game. I don't feel like I'm missing out.
No, I don't think you
You
are.
know?
I don't think you
Yeah,
are.
I
No,
feel like they're doing a good job.
I
I'm just
think the
getting the
benefit.
approach.
Yeah, I'm just getting the benefit of as I'm playing the game, I'm like, oh, this is so cool. So. Go ahead. Go ahead, Tom.
No, I just think the approach that they've taken, the way that they've introduced those of us who've never played the game into this universe have been very, you know, they've made really smart story choices. And of course, Nolan and Lisa Joy know how to do, you know, dystopian sci-fi, having
This is
done
true.
four seasons of Westworld.
All right, so let's wrap this up. And I think we're all saying definitely thumbs up for
Oh,
Fallout,
yeah.
and we'll
Severed thumbs, but they're still
Severed
up.
thumbs. All right.
Restone on.
So if you guys have any questions or comments, you can leave them at tvcampfire@gmail.com. You can listen to us on sci-fi.radio, 6 Degrees of Geek, YouTube, iTunes, and we'll talk to you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.